water, whole bucket full of truth. Proverbs 19 is where we're at. We're going to look at several verses as we look at this, the last lesson, but this particular topic. We've talked about all kinds of different principles and the idea of leading biblically, and tonight we're going to look at the principle of correction as it ties in with leading biblically. We are in Proverbs 19. I'm again reading in verse number 20. Hear counsel and receive instruction, that thou mayest be wise in thy latter end. There are many devices in a man's heart, nevertheless, the counsel of the Lord, that shall stand. The desire of a man is his kindness, and a poor man is better than a liar. The fear of the Lord tendeth to life, and he that hath it shall abide satisfied. He shall not be visited with evil. A slothful man hideth his hand in his bosom, will not so much as bring it to his mouth again. Smite a scorner, and a simple will beware. And reprove one, this is probably one of the key parts of introducing this particular principle, and reprove one that hath understanding, and he will understand knowledge. He'll gain by it. He that wasteth his father and chaseth away his mother is a son that causeth shame and bringeth reproach. Cease, my son, to hear the instruction that causeth to err from the words of knowledge. An ungodly witness scorneth judgment, and the mouth of the wicked devoureth iniquity. Judgments are prepared for scorners, and stripes for the back of fools. Now, there's several different things being introduced there, but part of the commonality of all that is the idea of some correction going on, or rejecting correction, or refusing where that correction could come from. Like in verse 26, he that wasted his father and chases his away his mother. Probably the greatest source that you have in your life of someone who loves you and wants you to do right is your parents. Even if your parents are lost, your parents want, they may not spiritually be what they need to be for you, but as far as caring about you and wanting you to do well, it's your parents. I don't think any parent wakes up in the morning and says, how can I make my kid's life lousy? I think kids think that, but no parent thinks that. We love our kids. We want the best for them. And so there's all kinds of teaching here about correction from different aspects of it. Now, when you think about leading, the very act of leading requires, okay, if I'm going to lead, and whether I'm leading a Boy Scout troop, whether I'm leading a Sunday school class, whether I'm leading a choir, whether I'm leading some folks at work, whatever I'm leading, if I'm leading, the very act of that leading requires a leader to say yes about some things and no about another. Some things you say, okay, yes, this is good, but if this is right, then by virtue that is wrong. They both can't be. If we're going right and someone's going left, you gotta say, no, not left, it's right. So this is the way we're going. And so you have to say yes to one direction or behavior and no to another. Now, the very act of following requires then being told yes and no. You can't follow and never be corrected. You're going to be corrected. No one is beyond correction. And because we're both leaders and followers, that means we're both correcting and being corrected in different ways and sometimes at the same time. And so that means we have to be able to both give and receive correction. Now, ideally, when you think about correction in the idea of leadership, okay, ideally it would be like going down the highway. You probably don't think about it much because it's kind of second nature if you drove for a while. Now, the first few times you drive, and you're going down the highway, you're like this. You know, and you're like trying to stay right between those two lines, and sometimes it seems so hard. But now after you drive for a while, you're like, you know, you almost like, you know, like sometimes you'll see women putting on their makeup and everything and doing all, and they're talking on the phone, putting on the makeup, reading a book and typing out stuff, all while they're, which is probably not a good way to drive. But it just kind of comes second nature. And, you know, you don't think of much about it, but the whole time you're driving, you're correcting. You're steering a little bit because, you know, sometimes the way the road is formed, sometimes just by not paying attention, you might move a little bit, and then you steer. And so you're always kind of moving back and forth, at least slightly. And that's kind of the ideal leadership correction. Minor corrections that are unnoticeable. Now, if you were riding with someone, it was like this. This is funny. I just thought about this. Back in our college days, when we were carpooling, this was a Kelly Choma role, a move. He would do this. So if you'd come to a light, I mean a normal light, and you normally slow down and stop. Nothing out of the ordinary. When you stopped, he'd go, oh, I'm like, oh. And you turn, if you just normally turn, he'd slam against the door. That was Kelly Choman. Now, if that was true, though, if you were riding with someone, and every time they turn, you were going this way, and going this way, and going back, and going forward, you would say, man, what in the world is going on? You know, that's not the way it's supposed to be, nor is that the way it's supposed to be in leadership. It's not everything is not to be an extreme correction all the time. Ideally, I hurt my hand up here. Ideally, it's like steering on the highway, minor corrections. Now, sometimes on the highway, some people aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing, so you got to make a major correction. But that's the thing you don't want to do very often. And I think the same thing is true about, again, leadership. Major corrections have to happen, primarily because others are making mistakes, so you're having to make some major correction. But those should be rare things, both in the driving and the leading. Now, I think this is an opinion. I think few leaders like to give correction. If you're thinking, no, I like to, that's probably not a good thing to like to do. I don't think as a leader you should look forward to correcting people. So few like to give corrections. And again, opinion now. I think even fewer like to get correction. I don't think most people are like, man, I hope when I go to work today, my boss yells at me. I mean, that's usually not the direction that we're thinking. But the truth is this, it has to happen. That or we're perfect people. We're not perfect people, so it has to happen. So correction has to happen because of our humanity. So therefore, as a leader and as a follower, we have to learn how to both give and to receive correction. It's important in any group you're involved in. So what can we learn about this idea of correction? Well, let me give you several thoughts. I want you to start with, we're going to start, and I want you to go with me to Mark 7. Mark chapter 7. You might want to put a place in Proverbs because we're coming back to it into another couple of verses here in a little bit. In fact, I'll mark mine. But right now, we're going to go to Mark. Matthew, Mark. Mark chapter number 7. This is an interesting, I think, couple of verses. There's a lot more to be said about it, but we're going to just look at these two verses. You can look at the rest later, I guess. But if you look with me, Mark 7, verse number 1. Then came together unto him the Pharisees and certain the scribes, him being Jesus, which came from Jerusalem. And when they, watch this, and when they saw some of the disciples eat bread with defiled, that is to say, with unwashing hands. Now watch these last three words. They found what? Fault. They found fault with the disciples, and by extension and really by application, they found fault with Jesus because they were his disciples. They found fault. Now, if you read the rest of it, the disciples were not at fault. Well, Jesus was not at fault, obviously, but neither were the disciples. Now, watch. Did they find fault? Okay, it's not a trick question. Did they find fault? Yes. Was there fault to be found? No. So here's our first thing we understand. Number one is this. Realize that finding fault with someone doesn't mean that there is fault. If we're going to correct people, first thing we need to understand is we may not see things the way they really are. Both leaders and followers are imperfect. We mentioned this a moment ago because of our humanity. Not only are we imperfect and therefore we need correction, but we're also imperfect in the giving of correction. Therefore, it is imperative, okay, if I'm going to give correction out, whether I'm talking about my kids, whether I'm talking about my Sunday school class, whether I'm talking about people at work, whatever the group I'm talking about, it is imperative that there is clarity and understanding before any correction is given. One of my favorite lines from Bugs Bunny, which is how I learned everything about life that I know, watching Bugs Bunny, was when it was rabbit season, duck season, rabbit season, duck season, rabbit season, duck season. And finally, Elmer Fudd is taking Daffy home, and there's playing this music, and they're going, because the thing was, shoot him now or shoot him later. And they said, shoot him later. So he goes all the way back to his house, then he gets shot. So that's how I kind of apply when I'm giving correction. You can correct them now or you can correct them later. if you decide to correct them later, that doesn't mean you're compromising or being wishy-washy or being wimpy. You may need to say, before I shoot them now, maybe I need to make sure that I'm supposed to be shooting them. Maybe I'm not, maybe I don't see it clearly. And so you can always bring correction at a later time if need be. So it's important that there's clarity, there's understanding. Now, how do we get clarity and understanding? By talking to them and asking questions. Okay, tell me. And if all you know is one side, it's good to hear the other side. You know, here's what they say. There are two sides of every argument. That is not true. There are usually a whole bunch more than two sides. It's what they say, it's what they say. Other people who will watch it may say, well, no, that's really not. This is really. And they'll say, no, this is really. And somewhere in the midst of all of those different sides, there's the truth. And so you have to ask questions to get clarity. You got to talk. You got to try to figure out what's going on. And again, it depends on the circumstance, exactly what you do and when you do that and how often, how much in depth you do that. But nonetheless, as much as you can, you want to ask questions before making an accusation. Now, I'll give you a couple things about this. A leader who asks questions for the sake of clarity may find there are extenuating circumstances of which he was unaware. Some years ago, when my kids were much younger, we were at another church, and there was a kid there, a boy, kind of a weird kid, which kind of describes a lot of kids. But he was a good kid, but weird kid. And I'm not saying that because I want to tell you what happened. So he wasn't a bad kid. He was just kind of weird. And he liked Holly. I think he liked Holly. You know, when you're a kid and you like a girl and you don't, you know, what do? Well, you go and pull her hair, you know, you go and poke at her. Because to you, that's flirting. To her, you're picking a fight. And it was getting Holly mad. Now, I don't remember all the details other than Jason said to this boy, leave my sister alone. If you do it again, I'm going to punch him. Well, he pulled her hair or did something, and so Jason. So they come to me, them being the powers that be. And they said, Jason just punched so-and-so. Well, that's really not a good thing you want to hear in church, that your son just punched out someone. Now, but when he told me, I said, well, Jason, tell me what happened. Well, you know, blah, 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 picking on Holly, and I told him stop. Now, maybe he was anxious to do this. Maybe he was eager to do this. Okay? You might find fault with that. But after he told me what happened, and I said, yeah, good job. You know, that he deserved to get punched. So I'm glad he did. So there are always extenuating circumstances of which we may be unaware. So you ask questions. You try to find those things out. Now, this leader also may find, so if you ask questions, you may find that there was fault with how the follower was instructed, which means it comes back on you. He may have did exactly what he thought you told him to do. You're like, no, that's not what I meant. I've come across that. I thought I explained it. They did. I thought I explained to do X. They did Y. And my question is, why did you do Y? That's not what you do X. And they said, that's what you said. Okay, so that's on me. Somehow I wasn't clear. And so, again, just because there's fault, doesn't mean that because we found fault, doesn't mean there's really fault. So we're asking questions. We're trying to get clarity about these things. And then one more thought about it. By asking questions, the leader gives a follow-up opportunity to be heard and understood. Or sometimes that's all they want. So that's the first thing. Realize that finding fault with someone doesn't mean that there is fault. Go back to Proverbs. Let me show you the second thought about this. So we're going to correct someone. But before we do, we're not just going to assume that we know what's going on. We're going to ask some questions, try to get to it. Again, it kind of certain situations are different than other situations. We're going to kind of hit that in a moment. But nonetheless, as much as you can within that particular situation, you try to get to the, if you will, to the bottom of it. There's a second thought here that I want to share with you. Proverbs 27, look with me in verse 21. As the fining pot for silver and the furnace for gold, so is a man to his praise. Well, what does a fining pot do? What does a furnace do? Well, it makes it pure. It makes it better. It gets out the bad, and so just the good is left. That's the idea. So praise helps purify, helps make something better. That's the idea. So number two is this. The purpose of correction, the fining pot, the furnace, the purpose of correction is to make the follower better. Why do you apply heat to the gold so you can get out the impurities of the gold? Why do you apply correction to the follower to make the follower a better person? That's the goal. So the purpose of correction is to make the follower better. So how can we apply some of this? Well, correction shouldn't be given with the attitude that the follower is bad. Both true about kids and employees and by any other group. Rather, there should be good qualities in the follower, and correction can help him be better. Now, if you're thinking of a situation, say, oh, no, I know this person, there is nothing good about him, then the question is, why was he in that group? If you had a Sunday school class and you had a kid and there's absolutely no way to help that kid, then the answer is, why are we bringing them? Well, we're bringing them because we do believe there's hope for that kid. We haven't X'd and crossed them off. And if I had a business and I had an employee and this employee, there was utterly nothing I can do to make this employee to be what he needs to be, then why is he there? I'll say this, and this is, I don't mean to be ugly, but it is kind of. There are certain places you go, they don't pay their employees much, and because of that, they get employees who are willing to work and not get paid much, which typically means they're not the cream of the crop. And you go there, and when I go into a restaurant, okay, when I go to Long John Silver's, and things aren't what they're supposed to be. Here's what I say this about every restaurant, but specifically Long John's, because I know Long John's. Here's what I say. They need to fire the manager. Because why do you have these people working here? Either you haven't trained them, or you don't have the right people here. Now, if my goal, though, isn't to go in and fire a bunch of people. My goal isn't to go in and be harsh. My goal is, can I take this group of people and through different things, this isn't the only principle. This is 16, okay? We've talked about other things. So I'm looking at that in the totality. But this is one of them. If I cannot take this follower and help them to be better, then why do I have them as a follower? I can't help them. The whole purpose is to make them better. That's what I'm striving to do. That's my goal in this. A follower who cannot be corrected cannot be improved. And someone who cannot be corrected and cannot be improved is a liability to whatever organization he's a part of. So we want to be able to correct them to make them better. We don't want to just say, well, they're just a bad employee. Okay, there's either that's your fault for hiring them, that's your fault for not firing them, or that's your fault for not trying to help them be better. We want to make our followers better. We don't just want to just cross them off. We want them to be better. Now, one way we do that is this. It is important that a leader identifies positive behaviors and praises them. He may be doing 10 things bad, but hopefully he's doing a couple things good. Okay? Hey, good job. Good job, Bob. You haven't burned down the building today. Man, I appreciate that. Man, I hate when people burn down the building. Okay? So you're trying to find something to praise them for. Remember the story about Bethany writing her name with a rock down the side of the car? I could praise her because she only did one side of the car. The other side she didn't get to yet. Yes. Huh? Yeah. M-U-D. My name is Med. Yeah. Yeah, that was always that's a funny story that I remind her of often. So it's important that a leader identifies. I know, if you don't know the story, it happened last year, just so you know. It's important that a leader identifies these positive behaviors and praises them. Now watch this. Okay? This should happen along with correction, but also independent of correction. If the only time you praise someone is when you're getting ready to correct them, they're going to get kind of gun-shy, because every time you praise them, they're going to go, oh, here it comes, oh, I know. Okay, we want to be able to praise people independent of correction as well. You know the old thing about a sandwich, you know, praise, then you correct, and then you praise again. Well, there's good things about that, but sometimes you just need to praise and walk on. It shouldn't always have to be correction. Now, if you have followers, some followers will say, well, no, I don't need you to praise me. I'm fine. Just tell me what I'm doing wrong. And my attitude about that is, no, because I don't praise you because you want to be praised. I praise you because that's what I want to do as a leader. You're not controlling my praise, either to do it or not to do it. So and some followers will do that. They're like, you go to say something to praise him. Oh, no, don't tell me anything good. You know, just don't talk to me unless I'm doing something wrong. Well, I'm sorry, but that's not your decision to make. Praising, a leader praising the followers is a good principle and a good policy to do. Now, let me just build on this a little bit more. Using correction to make followers better will also influence, now watch this, when, where, and how often I give correction. Now, what I mean by that? Well, watch. Some correction can be done publicly. Some should only be done privately. I have several policies I try to live by. Actually, a whole bunch of them. So keeping them straight, sometimes my head is kind of difficult. One thing is this: if you do something that needs to be corrected and it's done in a kind of in a isolated, private situation, no one else needs to know about it. But if you purposely went out of your way in a public way to do something, then I am almost now have to correct you publicly because it looks like you're getting away with it. Okay, it's not that I want to embarrass you, but you made a public issue about your doing wrong. Now I got to make a public issue about, no, that's not the way it is. Let me think of a situation. And I'll apply it to let me apply it to work. So let's say I'm at work and someone is doing something like turning timers off before they go off and bringing product into the window. And other people are watching this, especially, let's say, newer cooks, which is a big no-no. You don't do anything until that timer goes off because your product has to be cooked at a certain period of time, certain length, to make it to certain quality that we're trying to sell. If you ever go to Long John's let's not continue to beat that dead horse. So we're trying. Now, if he's doing it in front of these other employees and influence them, then I got to correct them in front of these other people because he's doing it in front of them. But if there's something happening and it's isolated, no one else really knows about it, I can go to him privately and say, hey, Chuck was one of the cooks who was really bad at this, who doing all kinds of things, even though he knew he shouldn't. I could go to him privately and say, Chuck, you know, that's not policy. You can't do it that way. Yeah, I know. Okay, well, don't do it anymore, okay? Okay, which would last 5 minutes. So some correction can be done publicly. Some should only be done privately. Give you another aspect of it. Some correction may be delayed because you've already corrected the follower about other things. Sometimes, you know, you don't just want to pile on because then they feel like, you know, I can't do anything right. Again, I'm not trying to make them feel bad. I'm trying to help them to be better. So sometimes it's like, okay, they did three things. I'm going to deal with the worst thing, and I'll deal with the other things at another time. I don't want to pile on them. I don't got to just mention every single thing they're doing wrong. You know, you can try to be a little gracious in that way. And then thirdly, we've got one more way. Some correction must be done immediately because of what's happening and what could be the outcome of it. Some correction can be done at another time. If you're turning on these vats with very little oil in them ahead of time and not putting oil in them, we're going to have a fire and you're going to burn down the building. So I'm not going to say, well, tomorrow I probably shouldn't. I'm going to say, hey, turn that off, man. Turn it off. Because, you're going to have a flash fire pretty quickly with hot oil like that. Some can be done at another time. You can just say, well, before you punch out, I'll touch base with him and make sure I deal with that. All that is, my goal is to take someone from where they're at and help them to be better. My goal is not simply to always be on them, always be nailing them. It's not to prove I'm right and you're wrong. I'm trying to take someone who's following me and help them to be a better person. That should be the heart of the leader. So I'm dealing with correction in that aspect. Let me give you a third thought about this. Proverbs 25. Now I said, probably few leaders like to give correction. It's really a headache. You got to deal with stuff you probably don't want to deal with. But I want you, we're going to look at it from another part as well. Proverbs 25, verse 2. It is the glory of God to conceal a thing, but the honor of kings is to search out a matter. The heaven for height and the earth for depth and the heart of kings is unsearchable. Take away the dross from the silver, and there shall come forth a vessel for the finer, kind of what we're talking about. Verse 5, take away the wicked from before the king, and his throne shall be established in righteousness. Now, the whole idea here is not just simply make him better, but that there is the requirement to do these things, which brings us to the third aspect of this. And that is this, it is the leader's responsibility to correct his followers. We can't be pacifists about this. I just don't want to say anything. It's your job. Tell them. Or let's find a leader who will. Some leaders abdicate their responsibility to correct their followers. And this is true as parents. This is true as bosses. There's parents who don't, I just don't want to say anything to my kids because they just put up such a fuss. Too bad. You're the parent. That's your job to correct them. Just can't let them go doing anything willy-nilly they want to do. You're the parent. Be the parent, okay? They do not want to deal with conflict or be forced to confront someone who's doing wrong. Did you know that when someone's doing wrong and you confront them, they are not always happy about it? They're not always smiley. They're not always saying, well, thank you. Thank you, Brother Choma, for pointing that out. Oh, man, I appreciate that. Normally, there's like, well, maybe it's not wrong. Well, maybe you just see it that way. Well, I do see it that way, and it is wrong, because that's the way I see it. So, it is responsibility of the leaders. I know it can be tiring, it can be laborious, it can be bothersome to keep doing it. But it's much easier to correct a 5-year-old than a 15-year-old. But I didn't quit being a parent just because they turned 15. I still have to correct them. Okay? At 5, you just put your hand on top of their head and say, no, go this way. At 15, you got to say, no, go this way. Okay? It's a little bit more. And I'm joking. I'm not saying manhandle kids. Okay? I got to be careful. People are like, Pastor White thinks you ought to grab your kid and kick him. No, I'm using a little hyperbole. Okay? So they don't want to deal with conflict or be forced to confront someone who's doing wrong. Now watch this. Leaders should be gentle. We talked about that last week. Okay, there should be a gentleness about us. But that does not mean passive. When Jacob was leading the group to Seir, I don't know if he ever made it to Seir, but he's going that direction. I think Jacob had another idea, but that's a whole other teaching in itself. But anyways, when he's leading them, and he said to Esau, no, you go ahead. We can't keep pace with you. And I'll lead on softly, gently with them. But he was still leading them. He might have been gentle in his leadership, but he wasn't passive. He was still trying to get them to go the right direction. And so we're talking about this idea about correcting. Again, we're not talking about being mean and hateful and yelling and screaming, but we're just saying that there has to be the responsibility of the leader when correction is needed to apply it. Now, that means this: it is the leader's responsibility to know what the right behavior is. The Bible says, train up a child in the way he should go. That implies that I'm supposed to know the way he should go. And so it's the leader's responsibility to know what is the right behavior and then correct the follower who is wrong. This correction often can be done gently without offense. But if it can't be done gently without offense, it still must be done. We cannot let a follower's reaction decide on whether we fulfill our responsibility. Now watch. This is a mistake. Now let's deal with parents. This is a mistake that some parents make. They want to pacify their children instead of correct them. Their children throw a fit in the store. Oh, you want this? Oh, no, you want this? Oh, no, you want this? What do you want? Please, what do you want so you'll quit crying? Now, I wish I could tell you. Here's what I wish I could tell you. We had five kids, and they were all pretty close in age, and it kind of stair-stepped down. I wish I could tell you that all five went into the store like little soldiers, and they never did anything that they shouldn't do. But there were times, starting with the oldest, all the way down to the youngest. But the youngest, Heather, I'm not sure if she was better or if she just was able to appear better. I think she kind of blended in. So I think she got away with some stuff. But anyways, starting with Bethany for sure, because you know, she was the only one for a while, and then down to Holly and the two boys, and then somewhat Heather. That there are times when I say to my wife, here, you keep the four with you. Me and so-and-so is going out to the car and have a conversation. Because my ideal of getting you idea is getting you to do what is right is not to run around the store and say, do you want this? You want this? And I'm not going to sit there and you scream and yell. We just got in the car and we'll converse and we'll come to terms of what is the right behavior in a store. And then when this is understood, and I'm leaving out certain details, when this is understood, then we'll go back in the store and we'll join the rest of the family. I'm not going to try to buy or bribe or any other way. It is, this is what's right and this is how the behavior should be. Again, there's a gentleness can be there. There can be a love and a kindness. All those things are true, but correction still is our responsibility. Let me just say this for the sake of it. The flip side, I am never for this idea of being in the store and whacking your kids and slamming your kids and yelling and screaming and shaking your kids. Okay, if you're going to correct them, take them somewhere where it's private so they still have their dignity and you're not losing yours, okay? But I don't believe in pacifying them. I believe in correcting them, helping them to understand what the right behavior is. And I'm not correcting them because I'm embarrassed. I'm not correcting them because they're yelling. I'm correcting them because that's not right behavior. That's the thing. That's not how we behave. Well, this is chase the rabbit night, so let's chase another rabbit. You know, I think one of the problems, when you see these 19 and 20-year-olds who are rioting, I think one of the problems is this: no one ever told them growing up that certain things are right and certain things are wrong. They can't understand, why can't I throw this trash can through the window? What's your problem, Mr. Policeman? It's a free country. No, that's not what that statement means. And all of a sudden, and then you'll see them, if you do some YouTube looking, you'll see them, they're out there, rah, 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 and then they get arrested, and they're crying and pouting, why are you doing this to me? Why are you doing this to me? It's not fair. You know, I'm wondering, how did your parents treat you growing up? They must have never corrected you. They must have just let you live any way you want to live and never told you what was right and what was wrong and put any correction in your life. And so, again, gentle, yes. Passive, no. Go with me to Proverbs 19. Let me show you a verse and then we'll get to the last point. Proverbs 19. Look with me at verse number 18. Here's a good verse for us about children in this regard. Chasten thy son while there is hope, and let not thy soul spare for his crying. In other words, don't be manipulated because someone can turn on the tears. Big number four. All right, let's look at, you're at Proverbs 19, let's go to Proverbs 20. One more aspect of this leadership and correction. A king that sitteth in the throne of judgment scattereth away all evil, now watch this phrase, with his eyes. 20 verse 8. Sitteth in the throne of judgment, scattereth away all evil with his eyes. There's something about the look of his eyes that people are like, okay, yeah, we're not going to bother you. Okay, let's go to another place. Chapter 16. Chapter 16, look with me in verse 12. Chapter 16, verse 12. It is an abomination to kings to commit wickedness, for the throne is established by righteousness. Righteous lips are the delight of kings, and they love him that speaketh right. The wrath of a king is as messengers of death, but a wise man will pacify it. In the light of the king's countenance is life. Now, the idea of king is being leader. In the light of the king's countenance is life, and his favor is as cloud of the latter rain. So here's the fourth thought about this leading and correcting. And here's this, the persona, and by that I'm talking about the outward appearance, behavior, what is being shown what's the word I want? I'll think of it in a moment. The persona of the leader is one of his best tools in correcting a follower. Now, I don't mean you're yelling and screaming and they're scared to death of you. I just mean that there's a certain behavior that means they know to take you serious when you're being serious. The persona of the leader is one of his best tools. Now, how does that look? Well, the first is this. A leader who is known to follow the rules and policies himself, while also consistently correcting followers who violate those rules and policies, will spend less time correcting his followers. When you're doing what you're telling them to do, you won't have to tell them to do it so much. Now, that may surprise you. But here's why. The follower knows that the leader will do what is right and expect the same from the follower. You'll make this decision basically once or twice, but then after that they know what you're going to say. So I'm going to tell you this, and some of these stories I know you probably don't believe. You think I'm sitting around and make them up, but these are true stories that I have interacted with, and a lot of them happened at Long John Silver's. That was just the place for all these goofy things that happened in my early 20s. So we had a manager named John. I was a manager before him. He got hired on later. I came up through the ranks. You know, I started out as minimum wage, you know, dropping fish into a star pattern. And we could do up to 20 that way. And if you're really good, do 40. But you're not, hopefully no one caught you because you're not allowed to do 40. I'm not confessing. I'm just saying it could happen. So anyways, I started out in the ranks. Started out at just a minimum wage, and I worked, and they promoted me into management. John got promoted basically off the street. He was a little older than me. He's probably in his 30s. I was in my young 20s, kind of like I am now. And so he came off the street, and but John really wasn't interested in being a manager. He was interested in getting a paycheck. There's a difference in those two. And so John didn't really care about what the policy was or who did what. Unless, of course, it looked bad on him. Like our boss showed up and seeing things not done right. And then all of a sudden, John's yelling, "Hey, why are you doing that? You know you're not supposed to do that." But when his boss was away, then they could do whatever. And so John always was kind of flip-flopping back and forth. You never knew John was going to make you do policy or not make you do policy. And I would come in because our shifts overlapped. Usually by an hour. He was finishing up. I was starting my shift. So there's an hour overlap. And a lot of times the employees that work for us, their shifts overlap. So some of the people that are working on his shift are going to carry on into my shift before my closing, because I usually close, my closing shift shows up. So, because his manager came in earlier than the closing shift. So anyways, this is a true story. It's funny. I'm coming in, I'm doing these paperwork and kind of different things and checking temperatures and everything, but I'm watching these and I know they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. I see them violating all kinds of policy. It's not my shift, really, it's John's shift, and John is doing nothing to tell. I'm like, and then John punches out and leaves. And as soon as now it's my shift, they all change. I don't have to say anything to them because they know that on my shift, I'm going to do what the policy is, and I'm going to expect that from them. They've worked with me. They know that. And I had very, very seldom that I have to say, hey, no, no, no. They immediately corrected themselves and did it the right way. Because it was a pattern. And when John showed up, if I had the first shift and he had the second shift and went the other way, they would be doing all the things by policy. And as soon as John showed up, it was live and let live. What's policy? Policy, smallacy, it doesn't matter. And I would watch the same group now change back that way because they knew how John was. So what I'm saying is, if we as leaders are consistently doing what we're supposed to be doing, you have better followers and have to less likely to keep correcting them. That's just the way it is because they know what to expect, which brings us to our second part of that. Conversely, a leader who is inconsistent in both his own behavior and his correction of his followers will spend more time correcting his followers. And the reason is this, and kids are very good at this. Now, I think probably my wife and I are pretty much always on the same page. Now, she's a nicer person than me. That is true. And she's more tenderhearted. That is true. I trended slightly one way, she trended, but for the most part, we were pretty much always on the same page. But that's not always true in every family. In some family, you have one parent, it could be man, it could be husband or wife, mom or dad, who is, okay, here's the rules, and the other one who is never going by the rules. Now, if that's true, if you're a kid and you know your mom or your dad, whoever it is, may or may not enforce the rule, and you want to go this way, but the rule says go this way, and you don't know what they're going to enforce, you'll always take the gamble. Because it just might get my way. But if you're around a parent who always is going to say, no, this is a rule, no, this is a rule, no, this is a rule, why even try? Because you know what they're going to tell you. So it's just, might as well just jump in line. Same thing is true in any other group. So if I, as a leader, am inconsistent, by my inconsistency, followers are going to be more willing to gamble that they're going to get away with the wrong behavior. What I'm saying is really, if we as leaders are what we should be, we'll have better followers. You're ready for the conclusion, aren't you? I'm not. A leader, now watch this, because I'm not done yet my point. You don't have nothing else to fill out, so you can just sit there and listen now. Ready? A leader could be, hopefully is, both respected and liked by his followers. Respected and liked. Now, let me tell you the hard truth of it. Being respected is more important than being liked. It's just the reality of it. A leader can have friends among his followers, but his responsibility of leadership cannot be surrendered just to have their friendship. If I put it to parents, it seems to be the slant tonight. If I put it to parents, let me tell you this. I think as you should like your kids should like you, but that's not the main thing as a parent. The main thing as a parent is you should be responsible to directing them to the way they should go. That's the main thing. Okay, being the right leader is more important than being the right friend among your followers. Doesn't mean you can't have friends. I think I have friends in folks in this church. But I cannot get in a situation where I compromise what I know the Bible says in order so someone in church is my friend. I can't do that. My responsibility as pastoring trumps my desire for your friendship. All right, now we can do the conclusion. I've kind of alluded to this, so let's just say it. In connection with the other principles of leading biblically, when the other principles are going, providing correction can go smoothly and productive. In other words, when I'm the meekness, the sacrifice, the compassion, the impartiality, the influence, the gentleness, when all these other things are in there, then the correction is much better. And I say that because some people, when it comes to leadership, all they think about is correction. I'm the boss. I'll tell you what to do. If I say jump, you jump. If I say don't jump, you don't jump. I'm the boss. I'll make sure. Okay, that wears out pretty quickly, like in the first 10 seconds. Okay, that wears out pretty quickly as a leader. So we're not talking about just correcting followers. We're talking about correcting followers in connection with all the other things we've been talking about. Being gentle, being kind, being compassionate. All these other things also should be there. Correction does not live in isolation of the all the other principles. They all need to work together. Multiple principles taught in the Bible. We can't simply just say, well, I like that one, don't like that one. Okay, they all need to be there. Correction, apart from the other principles, can be a time of anger and offense. I think you know this to be true. If you have a leader who you know cares about you, you're more apt to listen to the correction. I'm not saying you're not necessarily going to like it, but you're more apt to listen. You say, okay, well, you know, I know he wants what's best. If you have a leader who you think could care less about you, you don't really care what they have to say to you. You're like, yeah, right, you're just using me, and you don't like that. So we want to make sure we apply the other principles. If our only concept of leading is a title and the right to correct others, then we're not leading biblically. Okay, leadership is much more than a title and whacking on people who aren't doing what you think they should be doing. Now, I'm going to give you a couple of statements. This is true about the whole study put together. Ready? The ongoing need in every attempt to lead biblically is biblical wisdom. We cannot do this apart from the Lord. That means we seek to identify what principles apply to a given situation and how to apply them appropriately. That's why we need the Lord. Okay, Lord, which principle apply? And sometimes it's principles, multiple principles. And then how do I apply those principles? I knew someone who said this. I'm not sure why he said it. He knew better than this, but he had a tendency to say this. I think he said it out of frustration. And he said this statement. He was preaching to people, and he said, if I'm telling you the truth, it doesn't matter if I tell you, if I put it on the end of a baseball bat and whack you side the head, or if I put it on a platter and hand it to you, as long as it's the truth. And I'm thinking, that really doesn't line up with Scripture. Okay, because you look at Paul talked about he went to them gently and he was concerned about them. And the Bible talks about like a nurse going to their patients or a nurse going to little children, talking about trying to draw them. So how you present things is important. And you can't say, well, I'm the leader, I'll just correct them anyway. There is a proper way to correct people. And so we just can't say, and all these things are true. So I got to say, what principle applies and how do I apply it to them? Okay, how can I do it in a way that honors the Lord and helps them? Okay, that's what I'm not just trying to build a name for myself. I'm not just trying to, you know, puff up my chest and prove what kind of leader I am. I'm trying to honor the Lord and hopefully help them and bless them. So what principle, how to apply it. Now that means then, full circle, ultimately, because knowing what it is and how to do it, ultimately, one cannot lead biblically without God's help and his provision of wisdom. Because there's no way you're going to figure it out without him. All right. Encourage you to read Micah. We'll go into Micah again. Lord enabling us next time I teach on a Wednesday night, which I believe will be next.